Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. CCYS, Capital City Youth Services, is all about youth and families. Originally part of the YMCA, in 1975, CCYS established a youth shelter for kids when they had no place else to go. Over the years, the organization has grown to offer services and programs in 8 counties in the Big Bend area, which are all free and confidential. CCYS offers 6 different programs, and we'll talk about them this hour. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here in the studio, I am glad to welcome Kevin Priest. He's the CEO of CCYS.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you. Jess Tharp, Outreach Director.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Rachel Green, Clinical Director.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Donisha is a new resident in Transitional Living.
Hello. Thank you.
And Taylor Bureau, Street Outreach Supervisor.
Hey, happy to be here.
Yeah, look forward to talking with you. First, for the listening audience, would you give an overview of CCYS? I mean, how it evolved.
Okay. Well, it would help to understand the history of the mm-hmm. organization. And back in the 70s, we were underneath the YMCA and actually was known as a Someplace Else Shelter. That had a separate advisory group or committee that after the YMCA elected to go more towards recreational and family group type of activities they were involved with, they wished to release the shelter into the control of the advisory group, who then went ahead and established their own 501c3, and then at that time it became CC or Capital City Youth Services. So at the time, it was very limited to just primarily emergency shelter for youth ages 10 to 17, targeting kids that are runaways, truant from school, maybe having some family difficulty, maybe behavioral problems in school itself. And with that, we were able to add some counseling services just locally for the Leon County region. Since that period of time, and within probably the last 5 years particularly, there's been so many other additional programs that have been added that almost put us in a position to change the name of Capital City Youth Services because the organization had drastically changed. And through a long and arduous process of trying to determine what our name was going to be, that's where we shortened it to CCYS.
Okay. All right. Now, that puts a good understanding on where things are and with the name. And I know your focus is youth and families. How do you define at-risk youth? Who are they?
Well, I mean, I think all of us have our own kind of focal point on this, so I'll just start from a global aspect. To us, we want to reach youth before everything becomes a large problem. We want to give people an opportunity to be, A, number one, safe. Number two, put them in a position that brings some positivity to their lives and reach them prior to maybe getting involved with the legal system or something of that nature. We want to give everybody an opportunity and a chance. And ultimately, I think that's what we try to do with all the programs we offer.
Okay. Now, as I understand, you have residential and non-residential. Would that be the best way to characterize that?
Yes. We have 2 residential programs. One, Kevin has already alluded to, which is our crisis shelter that has been around since the days of the YMCA. Mm-hmm. We also have our newer program, the Transitional Living Program, that is a long-term residential program for youth who are experiencing homelessness and are looking for more independent living skills. And so that's where Ms. Dornisha is joining us from today. And youth ages 16 and a half to 21 can participate in services in the Transitional Living Program. It's a really nice new space. It has six bedrooms, private bedrooms with private bathrooms. And we ask the youth that live there to be engaged in two out of three different program areas. So okay. That would be education, employment, and community service. And that looks different for all of the kids that we serve in that program. So,
for the listening audience purpose, share with us why youth end up on the streets, why you have youth who don't have homes. Taylor.
There isn't one reason. No. I think every youth that we've met has been different. I haven't met the same kid twice. Mm-hmm. But there's a number of reasons. It could be family conflict. It could be disaster or low-income families. Sometimes if someone turns 18, there's just not enough means in the household. We've had situations with foster care youth. So after they turn 18, mm-hmm. they're kind of expected to know everything. And that's not always the case for folks. And so there's just a lot of different reasons that could lead someone.
So there's a plethora of reasons why, mm-hmm. but the end result is they all end up homeless.
Right.
Who are you serving? I mean, I know you have a number of counties you serve. I mean, elaborate on that for those who are listening, you know, mm-hmm. so they may know. Who do you serve?
So anyone in the eight county Big Bend region can take advantage of CCYS services. We have a counseling and non-residential counseling program that serves that are actually in those counties. We have offices in Taylor, Wakulla, and Gadsden County. So we have offices there where families don't have to travel to Leon County to receive services. And then those counselors also travel to the remaining rural counties as well. So that's one way that, you know, we reach the outlying and, you know, greater area and around Tallahassee.
What is the process involved in receiving services? And I know you focus on youth and families. What about that youth who does not have that family counterpart mm-hmm. to participate? How do you address that? How do you handle that?
Mm-hmm. We have a centralized intake process. So any youth, parent, guardian, guidance counselor, police officer, community person who's working with a young person that they think would benefit from our services can call our main number. It's 850-576-6000. It's staffed 24/7, and someone who is trained to take those calls will answer the phone, get a little bit of information about what's going on with that young person, and if it's appropriate, direct them to our shelter if they need kind of immediate housing. And then once they come into our shelter, if it's an immediate need, our counselors would work to assess who are the positive adults in your life, who we can get to kind of come in and support you. And if there aren't positive adults or there's no one willing to kind of step up for this minor, there are other things that we would do to make sure that they were taken care of.
Well, I tell you, it's very impressive, and I really applaud all that you do. But how do you pay the bills? I mean, it's free, right? It's free and confidential. How do you pay the bills?
Well, that's where, you know, a lot of it falls on my shoulders, okay. but I also obviously have a lot of support throughout mm-hmm. the organization. We are funded by a number of funding sources. Primarily, we do have strong relationships with our state legislature, with Department of Juvenile Justice, Department of Children and Families. We have a significant amount of funding that comes from the federal government that supports three of our programs. We are a United Way funded agency. We are involved with the CHSP process between the city, United Way, or formerly United Way, mm-hmm. and the county. We've become active partners within the Promise Zone,
What's that?
The Promise Zone is really targeting the areas that are more low income and have historically not received the services that they desperately needed. So we try our best to really be focused in providing services in those areas, and particularly with Taylor's program, the Street Outreach Going Places program, we're really making some efforts throughout those neighborhoods. So in addition to that, one of the things we've really worked hard, and particularly Jess in this matter, is really establishing our private base of donors. And I think over the last 5 years, we've grown a great deal as an organization because previously, even though it was a focal point, it wasn't quite as important for us to really focus on that because we had all these other support systems. Mm-hmm. And with that being in place, it helps us be able to expand all of our programs, even when we may have a funding source that may dry up, at least initially, and we don't necessarily have to focus solely on that one funding source.
Okay. So you look like you were going to say something. Oh,
I was going to say, you know, any funding source can go away at any point in time.
Sure.
So we have a pretty strong fundraising plan, a couple events that we host annually. One of the more recent ones is our Sleep Out event, and we have our, you know, Tally Awards event that we host every year as well, which is coming up in March.
Okay. Now, I guess you also take insurance. I'm just, yeah. You don't take any insurance. Mm-hmm.
We are not a Medicaid provider at all.
Okay. Yep. All right.
It's when just free.
See, it's too hard to believe. I'm going to slide something in there. Like, how can they do? No. That's fantastic. That's great. Do you provide placement services? I mean, for the youth, for whatever they may need, okay?
Well, one of the things I would mention we try to do, we've really become more effective in doing so in the last few years, is being collaborative partners with a lot of our community partners throughout the, you know, throughout Leon County, throughout Tallahassee, even into the outlying counties. We can't do this by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And honestly, we can focus on what we do well. But there are a lot of things that youth need when they go out into the community that we may not be able to provide to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to have so very strong relationships with these other partners.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with CCYS, getting all the info on what's happening with this organization. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I have people from CCYS. I have Kevin Priest, Jess Tharp, Rachel Green, Donisha, and Taylor Bill. We were just talking, and I had to interrupt you, about the partners, and I wanted to have you just elaborate a little bit more on the partners and the role that they play in your overall organization.
Well, we have partners that help. We have great relationships among all of our programs we offer, and I could talk about a few of them. I know for certain that are helping us a great deal. A couple of them, we're actually doing a partnership, a collaborative fundraiser towards the end of the year with Big Bend Homeless Coalition and the Kearney Center.
Okay.
And Sleep Out was something we established as a fundraiser for CCYS, initially focusing on bringing awareness about youth homelessness. And we felt that it was really appropriate to raise the awareness of the entire homelessness issue throughout our entire community. Hence why we've asked them to join us towards the end of the year for a multi-platform fundraiser, mm-hmm. and hopefully we'll gain a lot of success that way. A few that I'd like to have, for example, Taylor may be able to talk a little bit more about a relationship with CareerSource. Mm-hmm. We have some other partners I know she's working very closely with. So,
yeah, okay. So with the youth that we with the youth that we work with, each kid has a different situation, and so whenever we meet them, we do an intake and we figure out what are your goals, what are your own personal goals, and then where do you want to be, and then we figure out what are the resources in our community that we can work together on reaching those goals. And so a lot of times it's the same thing that we hear of employment, housing, and then maybe an educational point too. Mm-hmm. And so we work with CareerSource, and they help us with making making resumes, filling out applications, getting that work experience. We go over to them every Tuesday with whoever would like to go with us, whatever youth wants to go with us. And then we also work with Big Bend Homeless Coalition. They help us with some kids who need immediate housing in their women's shelter. Mm-hmm. And then we also started doing rapid rehousing, which the Big Bend Homeless Coalition has helped us with figuring out the best ways to do that. They were one of the first people in town to do that. And so after that, we can also work with Project Connect. They help us with our employment or our education.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do at this point is really review and go over, you know, your programs so that those who are listening can have a real appreciation for what you do. I guess I'll start with, what is it, the someplace else?
Someplace else.
That's the residential. Okay, so tell us about that. I mean, what does it provide? I know you have, what, family, you have individual counseling. Just tell us what that does provide.
So the Someplace Else shelter is the crisis shelter that Kevin described. It's a short-term residential program, and we serve kids ages 10 to 17. And all of those persons who seek our services might look different. So a young 15-year-old who has run away from home and doesn't have anywhere else to go can just come straight to our program and admit themselves. A parent who is worried about the behavior of their child and needs some additional support and services can bring their child in for a short stay. Or it might be law enforcement who's involved with a young person and doesn't have a place for them to go, might bring them to us. And while they're with us, we are working on helping them to develop some coping skills. We're helping work with the family to identify more healthy ways of communicating, because a lot of times what we see is pretty high family conflict with some of these situations.
And what's your typical, well, I guess there is nothing typical. I just cross that out. Okay. But what's your length of stay? I mean, how long can a client stay there?
It depends. It's very individualized. The average length of stay, if we were to look at our numbers, would be 9 to 10 days.
So that's pretty quick.
Yes.
And quick turnaround.
A lot of our older youth will stay up to maybe 21 days. And during that time, we're really working on identifying how do we quickly get you reconnected to your family or those positive adult supports. Because the last thing we want is for a young person to remain in our program longer than is appropriate. Most of the time, the best situation for them is back with family once we can get the youth and the parents in a kind of healthier position.
And with that being said, we offer some very particular specified programs within the shelter itself. So over the last few years, we really started focusing on certain populations where we're providing respite services to youth that are on probation. The same being true for kids that have been unfortunately arrested for a domestic violence incident. And instead of those youth, in essence, coming or having a record established based on that activity, we're giving them an opportunity to really get engaged with our shelter and in our counseling services to help them elude that.
So what I hear is someone who's headed down that road can come to your program and maybe avoid being adjudicated.
Okay. Absolutely.
And so they have some other options, and they won't have that you know, cloud hanging over them when they get themselves together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the domestic violence respite program, what a lot of research and studies have shown is that those youth are learning that behavior from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to come to the shelter instead of being arrested, and we can work with the youth and the family to figure out what's going on and why they got to that situation. Why are they, lashing out at mom or brother or whatever it may be? And oftentimes we find out that they've learned it from somewhere, and they've just gotten big enough or brave enough to fight back.
Indeed. Again, I ask how you deal with these families, because sometimes you encounter families who really don't want to be involved, okay? Who are saying, goodbye, don't bother about coming back. And I'd just like to get some more insights into how you make inroads with those families who are resistive, those families who are not, receptive to what you want to do.
This can be challenging, especially in our crisis shelter because it's residential and youth are coming there to stay with us. It can be challenging. What we've found is that a lot of times when a youth comes to us, conflict in the family is so high and tensions are so high that parents are at a point in that moment where they say, I'm done. I can't deal with you. And once they cool off a little bit and there's a separation and they have a chance to really think about what's going on and a chance to work with their counselor, they're able to kind of step back a second and say, okay, I was heated in the moment, but let's try to figure this out. But sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes a week goes by and, parent and guardian might still be in the same place. And if that's the case, at some point, if we have tried to work with the parents and really tried to collaborate and figure out what's the best outcome, sometimes there is a point where we have to involve Department of Children and Families.
Okay.
But we work really hard for that not to be something that we have to do.
Given the length of stay, what role, if any, does academics play at this point? Because I would think, your focus may be on dealing with this crisis, and you're talking about they're staying, on the average 9 days. Mm-hmm. The academics may be put on, I don't know, I'm asking you, how you address that.
For the youth in our crisis shelter, if they are enrolled in a Leon County school, we are transporting them to and from school each day. Because we want there to be as much normalcy and routine mm-hmm. in their lives as possible. For the young people who come to us from out of county, we have two case managers at our crisis shelter who work with the schools to obtain their schoolwork and make sure that they stay on track while they're with us.
Great. Now, I know another program that you have is the Family Place Counseling. Is that correct? Share with us just how that works, because now that's non-residential, right? And so I would guess that, well, you tell me. So I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. We have two counselors in Leon County that are just dedicated to clients in Leon County. And then we have those outlying offices in some of the rural counties. And so youth and families can be referred for counseling services, and they'll receive 12 sessions to address any sort of issues that a youth may be struggling with, family dysfunction, depression, bullying at school. Mm-hmm. They may be having trouble with grades. So anything that a youth may be struggling with, our counselors can help address those issues through those counseling sessions.
And so what I hear then is that there may be family counseling, but there may also be individual counseling.
Correct. So they can do individual counseling with the youth, mm-hmm. Counseling sessions with the youth and the family, mm-hmm. and then they also do groups in the schools.
Oh, okay. So the groups are in the schools. How does that work?
Well, and that's the thing. We have a number of programs where we're offering those kind of services and really to reach a larger population of youth that may identify what, they may be struggling with collectively or even as an individual basis. Mm-hmm. We have kids that come through our shelter that we're able to wrap around the counseling services with to ensure that they're, you know, when they do go make it back home, they remain there and remain safe there. I think that's the main focus that we try to do, and particularly with the groups we're doing in the schools, is to identify those issues that youth are having to contend with, that we can, again, reach that larger base.
How do you avoid this, if you're doing it in the schools, how do you avoid the stigma that may be associated with going to a group at school? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think we've really gotten a good reputation just based on the people we actually have doing the groups at the schools. Mm-hmm. They're very well received. Kids are able to share certain issues they're having to contend with, and our counselors are very adept to be able to understand where youth are coming from at the same time.
So I guess what I was referring to was more of their peers, okay, when I say the stigma, because I know you all are doing a fantastic job, but just the peers of, you know, that's a special, they know that that's a special group. And I just wondered if you had some insights or anything that you may share as to how you avoid that, because I think that that may be one of the difficulties that one will encounter when trying to get them to be receptive to therapeutic intervention. Does that, you know where I'm coming from? Yeah.
I think I understand your question. And so dealing with stigma around mental health or around counseling services is definitely a barrier for a lot of people accessing services. So it goes back to a little bit back to the partnerships that we have. So having these strong alliances with schools, we won't go into a school unless we're invited. So we want to know that the school wants us there and demonstrates a need. We also work with the guidance counselors to only host our groups during some sort of elective class so that the young person isn't missing out on like core curriculum. And then our counselors work with the group members to kind of coach them through, okay, you're in a group, and this is what we're talking about, and how does that feel, and what do you tell your peers about that? And we focus a lot on psychoeducation around mental health and around counseling, so we can give young people the tools and the words to be able to communicate to peers who might have questions or teachers who might have questions.
And with that being said, we do offer our what we call Snap-in schools.
I saw that. That's a program. Yeah.
So to go back to a population where that there may not necessarily be that awareness of a stigma per se, because we're working with youth that are younger, that the activities they're engaged in are very age-appropriate. Some of the kids that we are able to reach in the Snap-in schools program, it reaches a larger population, and I think they're all contending with certain issues. The it's going to be something that they can be aware of, and at the same time feel like they've had a experience of that of that level at that point.
It's something that's been beneficial, and they're getting something out of it.
Right.
Okay. All right. Donisha. Now, you are in, what is it, the traditional or transitional
living program.
How did you become involved in that? How did you find out about that?
One of the staff members attends my church, and she knows that I was going through some personal issues with my family, and she recommended I join the program. I was a little hesitant at first because I was like, it's going to get better. We always go through this, but not this time. So it came to a point where I did have to leave my family's home, and I started living in my church.
Okay.
For like a week or so, and then that's when I have a mom figure, but she's my first lady at my church, and she kind of, like, took me in, and then she told one of the staff.
Were they aware you were living there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
So she told the staff member, because she works at CCYS, and she was like, hey, we have her over here, this and that. So she got the paperwork for me, and from then, I just stepped foot in TLP.
So how long have you been there?
I've been there from, like, 2 to 3 weeks now, mm-hmm. and it's really fun and enjoyable. Like, I love my roommates, so mm-hmm. funny, and very family-oriented. Like, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. It's really nice.
If you were talking to someone who was in a similar situation, what kinds of things would you tell them?
Don't be afraid of change. You know, people, they like to be consistent in the habits they're in, but mm-hmm. sometimes that don't necessarily work out, and you have to change. Like, I wish I would have moved in sooner if I would have known it was going to be like this, instead of, like, being hesitant, like, oh, I'm scared, like, I don't know how the other people are going to react to me.
Yeah, what were your fears? What were your reservations that were associated with this?
That I wasn't going to be accepted because of how I carry myself. And I kind of see that in the house right now. I'm trying to change. I'm trying to bond with everybody because everybody has a different background. Mm-hmm. And I have to learn how to cope with others. And not. I have a bad habit of having these weird facial expressions. I try to change it up so everybody can like me because I like them.
Mm-hmm. So you're just trying to send a real consistent,
yes.
clear
mm-hmm.
message and not have it misread.
Yes.
Okay. And you're doing a good job.
Yes.
I haven't seen any strange facial expressions.
That means I'm working on it.
Well, you're doing a good job. You're being very, very good at it. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am talking with members of the CCYS community. Again, that's Kevin Priest, Jess Tharp, Rachel Green, Donisha, and Taylor Bureau. We're going to take a break, but we will return momentarily to continue to discuss the various programs that CCYS offers.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Did you know that over 1,200 youth are provided prevention and intervention services by CCYS in a year? And more than 1,900 students experienced homelessness in the Big Bend area during 2015-2016 school year. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and again, I am talking with members of the CCYS Community Youth Services. I know it's not it anymore, but a lot of people still know it by that. So I'm going to kind of throw that in so they'll know. Sometimes those acronyms are hard to deal with. But I'm talking with Kevin Priest, Jess Tharp, Rachel Green, Donisha, and Taylor Bureau. We have been exploring the various programs that are available. In addition to family place counseling and transitional living program, we have the Going Places Outreach. and Taylor, I turn to you. I know when you were on the program when we were talking about, what was it?
Human trafficking.
Human trafficking. Just hearing about your outreach program was really what drew me in. I was like, wow, we have got to talk more about that. So who do you serve, and what are the ages, and where do they come? Share with us.
I got you, yes.
Okay.
So we work with youth who are 11 to 21 years old. They are either homeless, running away, or at risk, and we work in all 8 counties of the Big Bend. So we work in a couple different ways. we work at a drop-in center where youth can come in during the day, and they typically come in, drop their bags, and then they want something to eat, so we have a hot meal for them every day. And then we also have a clothing closet where kids can get everyday clothes. They can have job interview clothes. We also have a food bank, so you can fill up for groceries for the week or just for the day, whatever you need. We also have survival aid, so some kids want to come in and get a sleeping bag or a backpack or new shoes, tarp, tent, anything like that. And we try to focus on what are your goals, where do you want to be, and how can we get you there. So
these kids are kids on the street.
Yeah.
They're savvy.
They
how
are.
How do you approach them? I mean, why do
with
I want to talk to
them?
Why do I want to talk to you? What is the appeal? Yeah. How do you do? How do you reach across those barriers? Because that's got to be part of it.
Right.
You've got to be able to come in and rapidly at least develop some type of rapport with them.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm not lying. We do use pizza sometimes.
I believe you.
But a lot of it is word of mouth. You know, it took us a while to get out there in the community, but with consistency, we went to high schools. We did street outreach at some of the homeless camps. We went to the shelters, into schools, churches, community centers, and we were just consistent with our message. And then word of mouth has been one of our best referrals, so kids just telling other kids to come to us. And then also referrals through other agencies. So CareerSource will refer folks to us, Big Bend Homeless Coalition, schools, law enforcement. And we try to be there for any youth who may have a fear of some services. They may feel like they've been burned in the past by some of the social services or that they don't quite fit. And they might not even be sure that they qualify for services. And so our approach is less clinical feeling, and it feels more laid back and less, less clinical to them.
Well, and I would think that, you know, you are going to encounter youth with a myriad of different issues.
Yeah.
No one is going to look the same. How do you address the youth who have problems with addiction? You know, we hear so much about that now.
Yeah.
And how do you address that? Because I would think that that definitely has to be a different take.
And it's different for every kid.
Mm-hmm.
We have a housing first approach when working with folks. So if we do have a homeless youth, I wouldn't expect them to become sober and go through sobriety while having to survive every day on the streets, carrying everything you own in a backpack, and then also, you know, now get clean.
So you're realistic in that.
But I
think that's really important because so often you'll find programs or intervention techniques that aren't realistic. That's often the problem.
Yep.
You know, they sound good. But when you put them in practice, they aren't doing it.
And some kids are just self-medicating. So, you know, if they've been on the streets and they're not getting the health care that they need, or the health care or prescription they've used in the past haven't been good for them, then they'll medicate themselves. And so that's not something that I immediately want to push on a kid to do. You know, sometimes that's a symptom of something greater, and let's focus on getting you safe and housed and happy.
So you are doing your intervention and your therapies and your techniques on the street?
Yeah. A lot of it is peer-to-peer. So we do have some counseling that we do, but it happens on their own terms and when they want it and where they want it, and they feel a lot more comfortable us coming to them, meeting them where they're at.
And basically, what I hear you saying is it's by word of mouth.
We do have good referrals. We've worked with a lot of agencies, but word of mouth, you know, sometimes a kid will have another young person that they'll bring in with them and say, I had to bring you this, my friend, you know, they really need your services. And so at least once or twice a week, we'll have a kid with another kid in tow to the drop-in center, pushing them forward.
We also have a pretty strong outreach plan and team, and so they're out in the community taking, you know, pizza or passing out survival aid or passing out, you know, hand cards with information on where they can get services with the drop-in center hours. You know, the drop-in center is open Tuesday through Saturday, and so they're you know, putting the information out there in various neighborhoods and letting the youth know that they can access services on their own time. So they may not want services now, but at some point they probably will, and they can come and find, you know, the drop-in center on their own time when they're ready.
Are there strategic places that you target?
Yes.
Where you know often you may find kids who are homeless but are out on the street? And if so, share those with us. Give us an idea.
Yeah. We do have a list of what we call hotspots, and so they're usually hangout areas. We try to focus on the promise zone, like Kevin was talking about, and so we go to a lot of community centers. We do some groups in the community centers. We bring supplies. We'll bring a bag of groceries out and just start talking to kids there. We go to a lot of homeless camps. And so sometimes with youth who are running away or who are transient, just living train hopping or traveling from town to town, we'll stop at homeless camps. And so we've built a really good connection with folks who have been homeless in our community for decades. And so they help us to come by the camps and to meet the youth that are staying there. And then also schools. So after school, there will be a lot of youth out and about, and we've met a lot of kids through there.
Okay. Yeah, you look like
one of the things that's really cool about Taylor and her team is that they are really intentional about the way that they provide services to kids. So one of the ways they do that is by being really non-judgmental. So she talked about having kids come on their own terms, having realistic expectations, and this housing first approach. They're also really intentional about even small things like their appearance and looking approachable and appearing like someone who could be your friend and that you could talk to, because that's really who they are, kind of at their core, is somebody who could be your friend and you could talk to. So I think they do good work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a very interesting program when you shared it before. In addition to that, I know you said you have the SNAP. Let's talk about a little bit more about SNAP. What is that? That's Stop Now and Plan?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
And that's a little different population, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a younger population, and actually it's something we've been doing now for the last 2 years. And it started out primarily as what we call a clinical SNAP, where we identify certain youth that have had some triggers in the classroom. Teachers were seeing certain behaviors, and into investigating it, they find out that the youth in question has the same behavior problems at home. And invariably, it's a situation that maybe the parents have been struggling with for quite some time. And so the SNAP program itself is not just focused solely on the child, but also encounters the parents at the same time. So we've been able to do the SNAP program out in the community. We really found a great partner with Hartsfield Elementary School, where we're hosting a group right now. And basically the way it looks is you have anywhere up to 8 kids in one particular group, and then you will have the parents in a subsequent group during the same time at the same location, just in a different classroom. And then invariably there's always a sibling group that we do. So you'll have 3 different groups going on all at the same time, and it's an opportunity to identify things that allow or give youth the tools to be able to be successful and learn how to stop themselves when they're engaging in negative behavior or having incidents where they may be reacting in a negative way, as well as giving the parents the skills to be able to handle those issues in a different manner. So,
okay. So what I hear, the one really unique difference, well, maybe two, is that these kids are younger and they are in the home. They're already in a home. It's not like, they have left home. They're in the home, and therefore they're part of that whole family, dealing with all those family dynamics. And you have everybody in the home in some type of therapy. You're nodding your head. Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah. So, so like Kevin said, we have the group with the young person who's been identified, a group with the parents learning skills, and then the siblings are also taken care of at the same time. And SNAP does a really good job of trying to break down any potential barriers that a family might have. Mm-hmm. So they provide transportation to and from group. They provide a meal at group. And then again, that supervision for the sibling group as well. So that hopefully, if transportation is an issue, we can do that. If food assistance is an issue, we're able to do that to kind of really break down those barriers and serve as many families as we possibly can.
Now, how culturally sensitive are you? And I would think that that does make a difference. Mm-hmm. You have a group of Black kids or a group of Hispanic kids. I don't know how receptive they may be if, someone walks in and their blonde hair and blue eyes, okay? I mean, that's
really,
we got to be real. That's the real deal, okay? Because what you're talking about is being able to connect. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know how you address those idiosyncrasies mm-hmm. that exist.
Well, the one thing I will say is that's been a focal point for us, particularly as for our entire organization, not just our services, but our board of directors, mm-hmm. our leadership. Mm-hmm. We really tried very hard to be very diverse, mm-hmm. and because we recognize the fact that our population is very diverse, mm-hmm. and we need to match what our population is. Hence why we've really made a targeted effort, particularly we talked about street outreach, mm-hmm. and we've recognized our weaknesses in that area because mm-hmm. we have not been in the past as diverse as we should be, mm-hmm. Particularly when we're dealing with African-American populations. If you're up in, say, Havana and dealing with the Hispanic mm-hmm. population or the Latino population, mm-hmm. we need to be able to match that as well. So I think we really made an effort, and we're not mm-hmm. quite where I would like to be honest with you. And sometimes it's just a matter of being able to establish those relationships mm-hmm. in order to allow that to continue to grow.
Okay. I'll add, too, we provide regular training on cultural diversity competence to our employees, and we're actually hosting a training, cultural competence, with Barbara Cheeves on Taylor Has the Date.
Valentine's Day.
On Valentine's Day.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's open to the community, so you can email taylor@ccys.org if you're interested in that.
Okay. And, in these last few minutes— I know there's another program I want to talk about, the National Safe Place. Mm-hmm. But for those individuals who may be listening and think, wow, I mean, they can't help but think, wow. Again, we applaud you here at 411 Teen. I think you're doing a fantastic job. I think that you are very sensitive to the needs of the community and the individuals that you serve. But what if someone wants to contact you? If they want to become more involved, if they want to volunteer, what is the process? What can they do?
So our website has a lot of that information, www.ccys.org. There's different tabs at the top of that website where you can contact us through email or call us on our 24-hour line at 576-6000. There's also a Ways to Help tab.
Give that again, a little slower.
850-576-6000 is our 24-hour hotline. And anyone can call that whether they need services or they're looking to get involved. There's also a Ways to Help tab on that website. And if anyone is interested in volunteering or making in-kind contributions or monetary contributions, they can find information about that there. CCYS was also able to establish an endowment fund last year thanks to an anonymous donor. And so we have this fund now that we are trying to grow. And for donors who are looking to make legacy gifts, we have that option available as well.
Okay. All right. In this last couple of minutes, let's talk about the National Safe Place. What is it about it? what is it? It's a national program, as I understand, in a number of states. So you tell us about it.
Well, National Safe Place has been around for a number of years, and actually it started out basically the YMCA in Kentucky, in Louisville, mm-hmm. Kentucky, and in essence has now grown to where it's a more or less a tool for organizations throughout the United States to be able to connect with their communities, as well as to connect with their partners within the community. And so we give opportunities to business partners to be able to learn how to open their doors and be a safe place for youth that are on the streets it may be just a corner store. It may be a library, or maybe, you know, someplace of that nature, where if their the safe place sign is displayed, then a youth can see the sign and know that they can go in there and seek help. And generally speaking, the way it's to work is that each of these businesses are then educated about the particular service available to them. Mm-hmm. And in this case here in Tallahassee, it being CCYS.
Okay.
And they can are encouraged to call us, and we can then start to get services in place for the youth that they really need them.
Okay. Well, the hands on the clock tell me it's about that time. I told you we never have enough time. I'd like to say thank you to Kevin Priest, Jess Tharp, Rachel Green, Donisha, and Taylor Bureau, all members of the CCYS community. Again, I'd like to extend my sincere appreciation for you participating and sharing your experiences. To my listening audience, tune in next week. Same time, same place to get the 411 on 411 Team. Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.